Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. At MidwayUSA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Damn these Biloxi blues, it happens every night.
Every night.
And I ain't never met a riverboat dealer that could ever be a friend of mine.
Nope.
Summer heat never treats me kind, it leaves trouble on my mind. So I'm bidding farewell, putting in my notice, and I'll see you at another time.
Sing.
This highway does not know my name, and I don't care.
Nope.
I don't care.
Not even kinda.
Headed my way for another place, and I got three good tires and a spare.
Right to the hook right here.
Just a white line gypsy getting out of Mississippi with just enough gas to get there.
Low budget live, not so live from the Low Budget Live Bar and Grill here in beautiful southern middle Tennessee. And I hope all of you low lifers are doing well out there. This is the podcast for Monday, January the 30th, man. We're almost clicking by another one of them old months here, headed into February and another month of winter out of the way. Hopefully we'll get back to some warmer temperatures sooner than later. This is, man, this is the 199 episodes, basically straight of this here program. And if you're just tuning in for the first time, you're wondering what a lowlifer is. Why is this guy insulting us? I actually ran into some friends of mine, Lawson's Outdoors here, Loretta, Tennessee. It's down there. And they're like, hey, man, we're watching you down here in the shop this week. And you're rough on those folks. My buddy James Ricketts, he said, you're rough on those folks calling them lowlifers. And I said, that's just what the lowlifers want to be called. That is the loyal following of this program, and we appreciate them. And if you tune in, you're a lowlifer. So welcome new and old lowlifers. Got to say, real quick, update, because I've been getting a lot of questions, been seeing a lot of folks. Got to go to the East Tennessee Fishing Show this weekend, and, man, so many of y'all came up and were asking me about this situation, about the health. And I'm, as you're listening to this on Monday, January 30th, I'm at a cardiologist. All right, so we're going to hopefully get some answers this week on what's going on and you know, put our minds at ease around here. So thank y'all so much for your thoughts and prayers and checking on me. It's it does not go unnoticed, I promise you, and it's always good. That's what the lowlifer group is all about, man. It's always overwhelming with y'all anytime anything's going on. So appreciate that very much. Let's jump into the sponsors, and then we're going to get into this episode. We got a doozy today. It's one that I've been looking forward to doing for a very long time, and I hope you guys are going to enjoy it as much as I did whenever I did this interview just a couple days ago. All right, StarTron, kicking ethanol in the teeth, in your weed eater, in your chainsaw, but most importantly, in that outboard engine, because nothing ruins a great day on the water like an outboard engine that won't run because stupid, dumb ethanol. It's gummed up the work. So StarTron kicks it in the teeth, gets it out of there, and makes sure that every time you get on the water, because I know you're busy, you're like me, you don't get out there as much as you'd like to, that StarTron is going to make sure that ethanol is not a problem for you. And we all know it's in your gas everywhere you go these days, unless you're running ethanol-free fuel. And then it's even more expensive than this crazy expensive prices that we're paying for gas right now. So get you some StarTron, put it in your tank, and I promise you, it'll run that ethanol right out of town. We appreciate the folks from StarTron. StarBright bringing you LBL for 5 years now. ProGuide Batteries, ProGuideBatteries.com. You're going to want to go check them out. If you're in the market for some lithium trolling motor batteries for your boat, they got some new lithium cranking batteries out there. I'm running a 31 AGM cranking battery. I ran the 31 AGMs last year for trolling batteries as well until I switched over to the lithium. Fantastic, fantastic batteries. Long time, long timers in this battery game. They're not fly-by-night. They are people you can trust. Go check them out. ProGuideBatteries.com. Use code LBL10 to tell them we sent you. All right, baitworks.com, bait-works.com. What can I say about these folks except, you know, they're amazing, man. They're amazing. I got to spend some time with them, and every time I'm around those guys, I'm blown away at their kindness, not only towards me, but their willingness to help customers. And it's crazy, man. But I got to spend some time with them over there at the East Tennessee Fishing Show where we released the LOB. It's now live, the Power Finesse Jig, live on baitworks.com. You can get some today. But just an honor to get to be there in front of that display. The LOB is very cool there at the show. But I just, like I said, everything, I don't sign on with people that I don't believe in or I think that, you know, they do the right thing or I can't support what they do, right? I'm never going to be that way with sponsors. I've left sponsors in the past because I didn't, you know, line up eye to eye with maybe what they were all about. And these guys they're fantastic, man. And their prices are good. Their customer service is great. And their selection's great. So bait-works.com. Use code Duncan-10 to tell them you're a low lifer. Go get you some of those LOB jigs. We sold several at that East Tennessee Fishing Show, and I'm ready. I can't wait to start seeing the pictures come in on social media where you guys are catching your first fish on a jig that we designed and got out there into the world. Some new colors coming too, potentially. We got some requests for some colors that, you know, we started with six custom colors that I did in that finer than frog hair skirt material, and then got some requests this weekend. So also great meeting so many of you low lifers there at the expo. It's just always blown away. I'm blown away by your kindness and the fact you give a damn about all this crazy world of mine. And I had the triple threat with me, and she was blown away as well. So so good to meet so many of y'all out there in Knoxville. And we're going to have a throwdown at the Classic, I can tell you that much. All right, bait-works.com. Go get it. Express Boats, hang the banner. The Bassmaster Classic winning high-performance, all-welded aluminum bass boat, the X21 Pro, bow to stern with that C-Dex. Got the 250 Yamaha show pushing that thing around. Best hole shot in the game. Trust me, trust me, trust me. Go take a ride in one. Go drive one, get behind the wheel. You will not regret it. Express Boats, building excitement since 1966. They're not one of them fly-by-night companies. Good people making great products. I appreciate the folks at Express. We're going to do a live podcast in the Express Boats booth at the Classic like we had the last few years. I think we're 3 years running on that. But anyways, Express Boats, it's gonna be fantastic, man, there in Knoxville. We got a big one planned for y'all there. Details to follow on that in the Express booth at the expo. All right, again, real quick, thank y'all to everybody that came out. Baitworks booth there in Knoxville. Again, I'm beyond grateful that this is life and that I get to do this. And as a little kid that just walked around ponds in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, and read things in Bassmaster magazine and watched the TNN Bassmasters, to stand at an expo and have my name on a lure for the first time in my life and have people come up and want to talk about it and have people come up and want to meet you and take pictures and things like that is something that, that never falls, you know, I don't take it for granted, right? It's just because it's very cool. It's very cool. So I'm very grateful for each and every one of you lowlifers out there and for sticking with me, roller coaster riding with me in this old crazy lowlifer lifestyle. All right. So y'all know me. I am as obsessed with songwriting and music as I am bass fishing. My life has always ran in parallels like that. Those have been my loves since I was a kid. I love playing guitar. I love singing. Obviously, y'all know I open every show with Biloxi Blues, a song I wrote. And I've played for many years. I've wrote for many years. I chased that dragon for a long time. And through fishing, the other love of my life, and through this crazy podcast, I've got to meet some fantastic people in that world, and I'm very fortunate to call them friends. And this guy that we're going to talk to today is a rock star. Period, end of story. He's a rock star. He is the lead singer of Whiskey Myers, Road Warriors, absolutely setting the world on fire right now, an independent band just seeing their dreams come true. And it's very cool to witness it because and when I say independent, they don't have some big fancy record deal out of Nashville and, you know, publicity teams pushing. I mean, these guys are just, they did it on the road. They did it grinding away like so many bass pros do. And the best part about this man is, I won't say the best part, but what ties him to our world here in this fishing podcast world is he is the owner, co-owner of Toad Thumper Lures. So he is equally, and you'll hear that in this interview, he is equally as excited about bass fishing and lure design as he is writing a hit song. So it's very cool. We're going to get the sauce from him, the W sauce, right here, bringing you this interview, America's Worcestershire sauce. It's good on everything. You can even drink it, maybe. I haven't. But we're going to get into the goods here. This man is, I've had a lot of requests to have him on, a lot of requests, and I'm glad we could finally hook it up. Ladies and gentlemen, from Whiskey Myers, the one and only Cody Cannon. Well, as promised, here he is, the man with the plan, the front man, Cody Cannon, man. We appreciate you joining us. The fans of the show call themselves lowlifers. So here you are, you're talking to a bunch of lowlifers, and I feel like they like me for a reason. And I feel like a lot of them lowlifers are out there at the shows for Whiskey Myers. So they appreciate you being here just like I do, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm a lowlifer too.
I love that, man. I may use that as the new intro to the show, because you're the coolest cat I know, other than my buddy Ryan Engelman, you know, and Turnpike. Y'all are the two coolest cats that I get to associate with at all. So I live through you boys. Well, man, I appreciate you. I told you back in December, I got to catch y'all down in Huntsville, man. And I wanted to try to do a podcast with you just because after you and I, we got hooked up, our buddy Justin hooked us up down there at ICAST. And I'm fans of a lot of the same people you're fans with. And then in the fishing world with the Toad Thumper thing, I just think it's so cool to me that a guy that's got so much going on like you do, because y'all burn it down, that you're like, you know what I think I want to do? I think I want to get in this fishing world too. So I think that's badass, man. Like that's and you were there at ICAST, and I'm like, this guy could be a million other places right now. And here he is sitting here trying to sell these damn frogs, man. So let's kick it off with that. How did that come about? Like, where did the idea, inspiration, where you're like, I'm going to get in this crazy fishing business?
I have no idea. It happened during COVID, you know?
Okay.
And I knew I wasn't going to be working for a couple of years. So that probably had something to do with it. But I have trouble sleeping, you know? I have, like, overactive mind.
Busy mind, yeah.
You know, I'd have like lay and I couldn't sleep, and you know, songs maybe would come to me and stuff, and I'd write a lot of songs that way. And for some reason, lure design started popping in my head for no other reason, you know. I think probably because I wasn't working, but I still needed to create or something.
Yeah.
So they just started popping into my mind. And then I called my buddy, who's now my partner. His name's Cody as well, because I knew he knew some people in the industry. And, you know, I had a bunch of drawings and stuff. And I was just going to I just hit him up, just be like, hey, you know, maybe you can pitch this to some people. I don't even want any money or anything. I just think it'd be cool to say I designed something, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was like, oh, no, the hell with that. Let's do it ourselves. So
yeah, I was like,
all right. I was like, you know anything about it? And he was like, nope. And he was like, do you? And I was like, not really. And so here we are.
So why, I guess, we all as bass fishermen, and you love it, man. I see you cheesing on Facebook. I've seen the picture get passed around this last couple of days. You with a new ride. You just picked up a new Phoenix. You out there cheesing. So you love bass fishing like the rest of us. But frog fishing, it's hands down. It's the best. Like that's the drug, right? The blow up on a frog. That's what gets us all hooked. Topwater fishing. Is that kind of why the frog? I mean, I know the company's called Toe Thumper, but why that lure category, just to kind of jump into? What was the, I guess, the passion behind that?
Man, I thought there was a need there. You know, there's a lot of grass and pads and things like that where I live. So that's a lure. Yeah. I've always fished a lot. And I never found one I truly loved. So that's why I started with that. It has nothing really to do with the name. The name comes from my daddy would call him toad. Like, you caught a big one, he said, oh, that's a toad.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
that actually has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Frog. That was just kind of a throwback to him.
That's cool.
But, you know, I'd have one, you know, I love the action of this frog, but the hookup ratio is terrible. This hookup ratio is pretty good, but the action on this one, you know, there's all these ones that I kind of liked, and there wasn't any one that I loved. And so I was like, man, I don't know. It just kind of popped in my head to just do that first.
Well, I can
not the easiest bait to start
out with. Dude, it's tricky with a frog. I think there's so much more design work, I think, that goes into one than people realize, especially building one, a new one from the ground up, man. And you have, I've got a dear friend of mine, Alex Davis. He guides on Gunnersville. I consider him like as good with a frog as anybody. He's probably won more money with a frog than most folks I know in tournaments. And he and I got talking this fall about that. You guys have built, in my opinion, it's the best walking frog.
Yeah.
It's so easy to walk, but dude, and the hookups are great. Like I'm ready for the spring. I got them kind of late in the year and I wasn't getting to fishing near enough, but man, I'm looking forward to it warming up and getting after them. But you guys are on to something, and you got other stuff coming too, man. That's what's cool, following right up on the frog.
Yeah, I'm proud of it. We did a good job. It was just kind of changing things. You know, it takes a couple of times. You can do anything, you know, if you just put your mind to it and just keep after it, I think. With that, there was just some certain issues I wanted to address to make it, you know, I just wanted to build the one that I thought was the best, you know, when all around, you know what I mean? Not maybe the best for a certain niche, but that could cover everything. And I think we did it, at least in my mind.
I think you did. The colors are great. Like I said, hookup ratio from what I've seen is great. And
you can do all that. You know, you can, that's all in the design too. You know what I mean? Those things didn't just happen. It was all a thought process about little things you can tweak and change. And, you can get it to walk easier by changing certain things. You can drastically improve your hookup ratio by changing certain things, you know, like the, especially the shape of the body and things like that, making it less rigid and still, everything's a give and take. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's a couple of times, man, I get them. It's not right, man. It's not right. And then change it. And We got it to where we were very happy with the product.
So you were real heavily involved, though. You were like getting protos, taking them and slinging them and seeing
if I designed the whole thing on that product. That's awesome. It was actually from a drawing is where it started from. Because you see my wife in here having to set the computer up for me. I don't do computers. So it was just like sketches and then just building it up and then changing things.
Well, there's a reason the show's called Low Budget Live, because I don't have a damn clue what I'm doing. I got one little camera and we send it, and I got some old music equipment that I use for the audio side of it. That's where it got its name. So I'm with you. Anybody that listens to the show go, yeah, this guy's the least technical guy in the world, because I have just dumb crap happen on here every week because I'm a one man band for sure doing this. Yeah. So I appreciate the fact that you're not good on the we need you doing other things like making frogs and writing the songs that you write, dude. So
yeah,
leave the computer to the IT people. We'll figure that out for yeah. sure. So
I'm old school.
Dude, whenever you I mean, growing up, you talk about your dad calling them toads. That's so it's been in your life. You boys live it. Like so many of the lyrics of your songs, I think there's a reason they speak to the people they speak to. Because it's authentic. Like you guys grew up there, East Texas, hunting and fishing, right? I mean, that's life. When you're not on the road, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, it was just, that's me to the core, really. I grew up, you know, I'm from the woods, middle of nowhere, you know?
So yeah.
I grew up hunting and fishing with my, you know, my dad, my grandpa, my great grandpa, things like that. You know, that's a typical story for a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's kind of, when I think of like fond memories, you know, when you're a kid, they always kind of revolve around those times like that. Those are like the only things you can almost remember sometimes.
That's interesting. That's a cool thought, because that is true. Those are the things that stand out. Even you may have, it's always those high times, I guess, you know, I can think of so many. When my granddad, he passed away in 2019, he was 90. And he used to just drag me around all the time in the summer. We'd either fish off the bank or we were wading creeks. And a lot of my love for fishing came from him. And of course, my dad too, he got me kind of in the tournament side of it. My granddad was like, just get in the back of the truck, let's go. And we'd either be digging worms to go catch catfish or bluegill, or if we caught a bass, hell, it was like we won the lottery. We were just, he was retired, and man, he was my guy. So that's cool. And I try to pass that on to my boys, like those stories, because they need told, right? And when you just makes you smile, man. So that's awesome. And like I said, you can tell it's authentic. And the first time I got to be around you, I was like, all right, this cat is the real deal. And I'd always heard that through the grapevine that you boys are what you are, you know. It's like, and it's refreshing, because, and you know this better than I do. I mean, I chased the music thing for a little bit, and I've got dear friends that are still in the industry, but it's a little fake at times, right? I mean, I think that's fair to say, right? I'm not throwing shade or talking about folks, but sometimes I live close to Nashville, you know that. And man, when I was up there and I'm doing a songwriting thing and trying, and I'd meet somebody and they'd be on stage, they sing something. I'm like, hell yeah, man, I think me and this cat right here could be boys. And then we gets off stage and I'm like, oh, wow, you didn't mean any of that. Okay, all right, well, I'm just going to move on down the road.
Just got done with his pedicure or something.
there's a lot of that goes on, man. I think that's why it's so, you guys resonate so well with people. But how much do you get to fish? And I know a lot of fans listening to this probably wonder this. Do you get to fish on the road? Like when you guys have shows, is it all business when you're out there? Because you guys have a lot of dates a year. You don't ever get to go, oh, okay.
Once in a while, if we're fishing somewhere and we're around a lake and we kind of got a hookup, you know, we can go. Okay. We have done that, but not very often. You know, a lot of times you're in a major city, you know. And then it's business, you know, like you say, you roll in, you do the show, you go to the next town. You don't have a lot of days off in between. So, it's happened. Fished with Alex on Gunnersville before. Yeah. So some different lakes that, you know, we've had the opportunity, but it just depends. It's not that often on the road, you know.
Yeah, I know Ryan with Turnpike, he and I joke about that a lot. I'm like, you need to hook up a damn bass boat to the back of that bus or just hire somebody. I've offered my services to him. I'm like, just hire me. I'll pull the boat. And when you get 4 or 5 hours, we'll slide out to some lake, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good gig, right?
Our bus driver would actually probably really like that. So she'd probably try that this year.
That's this is something that I feel like I talk to a lot of guys on the show that live the dream. I'm very fortunate to get to have conversations with people like yourself and a lot of pro anglers and musicians and things, but it's still, I want to talk about the realities of it too, though. And it's still work, right? I mean, you guys get, you're playing sold out shows, but man, the grind away from your family, the time that you have invested, I mean, since 2007 to get to this point, man, it's still a job, right?
Absolutely. It's a job. The older you get, the more you think of it as a job too. You kind of have to be successful at some point. Anytime you monetize anything, it kind of changes it. It makes it a job.
Yes.
Really, it's like this weird transformation. Yeah. Even like, you know, fishing's obviously not a job and I do enjoy it. But when I was testing those frogs, you know, like it changed the aspect. I had to go test these prototypes. It's like, oh man, I got stuff to do. I really don't want to do that today. You know what I mean? I'm about to leave to go on the road. I need to see my kids. You know, so anytime you add that, it does kind of change it to where if you were just going fishing, you would want to that day, right? Because that's what you were planning to do.
Absolutely.
And the same thing with shows, man. Sometimes you get, you know, it is what it is.
Well, especially,
it's, I mean, like anything, man, you know, I'm blessed. I'm not complaining, but it's,
oh,
it's,
I know that.
I was working today. I mean, you work all the time. You know, it's just like any other job.
When y'all give so much, like, it was my first time getting to see you guys live after knowing of y'all for many, many, many years and never been able to go, to be honest. And y'all give every damn ounce you got.
Yeah.
It is. And that is, you're notorious for that. I mean, that's what I've heard for years, and getting to see it, it's just, I was truly blown away that there's nothing left like to give at the end of the night when y'all close it out. Just like, all right, everybody got their damn money's worth. I'll assure you that. And I think that's what people don't realize in that world you guys are in is how much it takes to be on, you know, and for you, it's not only having to be there, having to travel as much, but dude, there's so much strain just vocally, right? Like to be the front man night in and night out. And I know you guys sing and they back you up and y'all share some responsibility sometimes on certain songs, right? But for the most part, you're sending it. You are the lead guy, and man,
like a lot of screaming too.
Well, yeah, you guys are, you throwing down, right? Like it's not, you're not up there singing ballad after ballad after ballad. Like you got the mic, Eddie Vedder style, as I like to call it. And you letting them have it, son. Do you ever run into vocal issues though? I guess as a guy that sang his whole life, I have smoky bars kill me to this day. Like I can't.
When I was younger, I had some issues, but it was more of the lifestyle that I was living. Been forever. I've been notorious about never having any vocal issues. I could sing not. And then this year, at the end of the year, when we were down there, my vocals started getting a little shaky. I was feeling like I was getting hoarse and stuff like that. But that's the first time in years. I'm like the opposite usually. And I think that was in the winter, right? Or the fall.
Yes, December, I believe. Yeah.
So I had gotten like a cold, a COVID or something, you know. And then after that, my vocals, like if you get sick and it gets a little bit wompy, it'll stay like that for a while and you'll start having some issues. So in the winter and stuff, that can be a problem. But usually, if you're not like out partying and drinking or smoking cigarettes and stuff like that, it was never really a problem for me. I'm weird because like we've been off for a long time and like we're going to actually go rehearse and work up the set. And I have to start singing because I can't sing those songs right now.
Really?
So if I'm off, I'll like lose my voice. I won't even be able to sing those songs. But after like ramping up, I'll be able to sing again. It's really weird. And the more I sing it, the better I am. It's like the inverse of most people.
That's incredible, man. I never would have guessed that because I have to be careful because I will completely, like at the Bassmaster Classic this year, we always play on Saturday night. We do a live podcast and we play just a bunch of buddies at a bar every year for about the last 4 years. And after I talk at the show, like I tend to do and run my mouth in the booth by Sunday, I'll be gone, man. Yeah. You give me 3 hours of bull crap singing and not taking care of my voice for years. So I have so much respect for guys that can just go in night after night after night after night and just be able to just sound just on point, man. And I'll be honest with you, if it was weak in Huntsville, you sounded all right.
I was starting to get nervous, you know, because there's a point though that if you get past, like, you're jacked, you're messed up for a
long time.
Especially if you still play shows, it's real bad, you know.
You can ruin it. I mean, you can truly hurt it.
You can really get messed up. It ended up being fine, but that was the only time I had gotten sick and I was off. And then I got back on the road and my voice was kind of a little wompy for a little while. And I was worried about it.
So, like, headed into this new tour, you guys kick it off in Knoxville here in just a couple weeks, February, 19th, I think. And it's, you're fixing to be gone again. It's like February to August. Y'all are doing dates with Eric Church this summer. I saw that got announced. That's pretty cool. Some of those outdoor amphitheater shows and things. But when you're talking about set list, this always intrigues me as from a fan and from playing music. You guys tend to do the same thing every night, right? When you got a tour, because you want it to be as tight as it can get. I know you'll probably alternate things in.
Yeah.
So headed into 23, though, you guys will kind of revamp and change up. I know you got your constants. You're always going to play, of course, you know, the fan favorites. But will it be a big change going into 2023? How much thought do you put into that?
I haven't thought about it yet. That's what we're
doing. Let's just write one right now. We'll just make it out right here.
That's what we're working on next week. Man, it just depends. It can be hard because the songs that you're putting on that set are usually your best songs live, and there's a mix. There's a reason they're there.
For sure.
So sometimes when you throw it in there, it's not as good. So you have to say, your way is different, better than the best and stuff like that. And you've done different combinations and different things. Over, you know, we've been doing this for, I think, like 17 years now. It gets harder because you're like, oh, I've already done that. You're like, oh, we could do this. You're like, oh, we already did that. You know? So, it'll come out, though, and we get in there and start working. But, yeah, for the most part, when you're doing a tour, we try not to change it too much because you can kind of mess it up. Juice for sure.
So no audibles can set things, you know, off the track sometimes.
Yeah, we've audible before, and yeah, ended up in an interception or a fumble or something like that. It just depends, man. It just depends. Also, when you have a lot of people playing, it's harder. Like when I play acoustic shows, every once in a while, I didn't do any this year. I used to do them every year. It's just me and Tony. We can do whatever we want. And ask the crowd, like, what do you want to hear?
Yeah, for sure.
But if you have, and if you wrote that song, you'll remember it for like ever, probably. But if you're a guitar player, a bass player or something, hadn't heard that song in 7 years, and somebody called it out, if you're all up there, they'd be like, I don't even remember that song.
They're like, no, not doing it.
You know, so it just depends, man.
Yeah, especially a drummer. Don't want to go into the unknown.
That's for sure. Everybody else is pretty good with going into, we'll just wing it. But yeah, those drummers, they got to be on time.
They could be sticklers. Mm-hmm. Sure. I've played with several over the years. They're like, what the hell are you doing? Why are we doing this? We've never played this. Well, let's try it. I mean, there ain't 10 people here. Let's try it. You know, shit. What are you worried about? We ain't on the damn Grand Ole Opry. Calm down. Yeah. I've had several of them over the years that took it real serious, man. All right, well, going back real quick, something that I want to talk, because obviously a ton of Fisher fans, but a lot of music fans that wanted to see Cody Cannon on here, and I appreciate you. I want to talk about your relationship with Big Lee, Lee Livesey. I had Lee on. I love Lee, man, and Lee is he's such a good dude, such a talented angler, but I had him on here, I guess, right after he won Chickamauga. In 20, and I said, and I'd been knowing him a minute before then, but I'm like, you have the greatest boat wrap in history. You have the coolest sponsor. When you're sponsored by beer and one of the coolest bands out there, I'm like, dude, you got this deal by the balls, to be honest. Like, you got this deal figured out. How did that come about? I know you're kind of from the same area, but how did that relationship with Lee start?
So I fished with him. you know, before he was on tour and stuff like that. Yeah. So we knew him and we were friends with him already. And then the opportunity came and we wanted to be a part of it, you know. So it's pretty cool, right? Some dude,
yes.
You know, he's a hammer, right? And he's getting the opportunity to show it and stuff like that. So we were one of his first sponsors. And we thought it would be cool, like, you know, that had never been done before, like a rock band doing never. Something like that. Like, it's like, I don't know, like Express or something like that. People that have something to sell in the industry would do that. And I don't know. We just like doing stuff different, I guess.
So. Well, it was just, I'll never forget, like when he won, seeing the Whiskey Myers, like official pages on social media, sharing Lee Livesey holding a trophy or a bass. I'm like, you know what? Yeah. These boys got it right. Like that's what we need in the sport. And for Lee, I think having
that classic now, that's what we're going for this year.
Ooh, no pressure, Lee. No pressure. Yeah. If anybody, he's so due for another like big one. And that, I just feel like where that one's at, it's in his wheelhouse, man. I think about everywhere they go is in Lee's wheelhouse. I feel like Lee will really give him a hard time for Angler of the Year this year. He's just continually to improve overall. Cause he used to be, and I would say this if Lee was right here, but it was roller coaster, right? Like he would swing huge, like these Lake Fork bags or a Chickamauga win. And then, but the lows would be kind of get away from him sometimes early on, but now, man, there's not many lows and he's really consistent overall, which, you know, is what it takes to win.
With experience too, probably.
For sure. And traveling all over the
professional angler, but that would be my guess.
Yeah. Well, traveling the country, getting to know the different lakes and things all over, man. He's a scary dude. He's scary. I appreciate y'all being a part of that for so many reasons, man. It just, I feel like that endorsement alone, right? Having that name on the side of his boat, there's no telling like how much that exposes him to a different crowd, you know, and then exposes bass fishing. Like that's a big deal for a kid that grew up wanting that sport to be as big as it can possibly get. Like, it's very cool, man. Very
cool. It was super, super cool for us too. And for me, I was like giddy. I thought it was just neat, you know?
I'm sure that's well, the fact that you guys are in a place where you can do that too, right? I mean, it's kind of runs parallel. Like, you guys have been at this for so freaking long. You've known him before he was on the Elite Series. Now you guys are just a household name, and then he's coming up. And so it's very cool that match was is even possible, you know?
Yeah, the first time me and him fished together, if I remember correctly, he was in like a 16-foot pro craft. Yeah. And the wind was, we were on Lake Fork and the wind was blowing about 170 miles an hour. He'll probably remember that trip. Yeah,
I did. I'm sure he will.
Yeah. I think if the waves were so big in that little boat, I think if the water wasn't so low, we probably would have hit our head on the bridges. We were getting after it.
I'll go ahead and guarantee Lee remembers every trip the wind blew in that pro craft.
Yeah. I think it was a pro craft. It was something like that. It was a little bitty boat, and I'm pretty sure it was like a pro craft.
And that's just when he was guiding on Lake Fork then.
I think this is before he was guiding.
Oh, no. So you go back even before
this
that.
This was a long time ago.
Okay.
And I could be wrong. I don't know if he was guiding on Fork then. This was a long time ago.
Wow. Even better then.
So I mean, it was over 10 years ago for sure.
Jeez. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Now, are you the only one in the band that likes to fish?
Yeah, in the actual band. Yeah, my tour manager bass fishes and our bus driver bass fishes. I've known our tour manager forever, and so we kind of grew up fishing and stuff like that. Our dads fished together, and so we do mainly, you know, the other guys. I mean, they'll fish a little bit and stuff, you know, if they're invited, but they're not, you know, like us or anything. They're obsessed.
They're not waking up in the middle of the night designing frogs or anything.
Yeah, just I had all these. It was just so weird, man. It's just weird when stuff like that happens, and I did. And as soon as he told me that, like I said, I didn't have to work or anything for a long time. I just went and stayed up for like a night, and I just had like 150 ideas, you know. So I just slowly start rolling them out. It takes us a while, you know, because we're just doing it part-time. There's just a couple of us. So we're coming out with some new products here in about a week or so.
That's why
two soft plastics that are super cool. And then we have some more stuff in the works. It just takes us a while to do it, you know, and to get it right.
I was going to ask, can we talk about what's coming next? Because I know you told me a little bit, but we're going away from, I'm sure you'll continue to add to the Frog topwater line going down the road, but now you've got plastics coming and they look juicy.
Yeah, they're cool, man. It's two products. One's called the Crawl Gill and one's called the Bad Crawl. And they're super rad, man. You've seen them. They're super cool. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to be out earlier, but it took us forever to get done with packaging. I'm kind of stickler about like details and stuff. That's probably why it actually takes us so long to come out with stuff. The Crawgill is cool, man. It's that creature bait. And it basically has, I called it that because it has the profile of like a little bitty bluegill. But it also has the kind of that crawfish profile too. It's really neat how we designed it with the ribs and everything, and how it helped with the hookup and collapsing. I don't really have one here to show or talk about, but it's super cool. And then it kind of went like a lot of the creature baits, you know, like a beaver style shape.
Yep.
A bunch of them didn't really kick as much, but the crawls do. So I just kind of inversed that too to have it a little something different. So our actual creature bait kits more than the crawl. I wanted to go old school on, you know, with the bulbous like claws and stuff and not have a bunch of swimming. I wanted to actually act like a crawfish. It's super cool, man. I caught a bunch of fish on it this fall. But yeah, we're excited about both of those baits coming out. They should be out in a couple of weeks, actually.
And that'll just be able to get them on your website. And I know, like, I'm with baitworks.com. I know they added the frogs on Baitworks. I'm sure they'll pick those plastics up but they're going to be available in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so as soon as they hit, you know, it'll be on our socials and stuff. They'll post about it. And we get all that dialed in and get them in stock, they'll be available, you know, on our website first. And then they'll go out, whoever wants them. It's neat, man. Just testing those baits is so fun. It's kind of hard, you know, but it's fun. It's kind of a challenge. I just love like the little intricacies of stuff and little things you can do can kind of change it. And you learn so much, like messing with those plastics when I was prototyping and doing stuff like that and just looking at them underwater and stuff like on the bag crawl, for instance, doesn't, you know, flap a lot. And so if you take those, like, any of the baits that have like flangey kind of flappy legs and you think you have a lot of action in them, and you do on the fall, but what happens is actually the something like the bag crawl that's more rigid, that's not going to do all this, when it gets on the bottom, it actually has way more action than anything with flappy legs,
just at rest.
Just because how it's shaped, like, so if when you're actually on the bottom and working it, anytime you touch it, it's actually moving way more than anything with flange legs. Wow. I think it's probably because it's how it's ridged and stiff, kind of like a shaky head.
Yeah.
It's a way to describe it. It's obviously not a shaky head, but you know how it moves real easy because of that?
Yeah.
I think it's probably like that instead of something like this. So you learn stuff like that, you know, when you're messing with different lures underwater, and which is really fun for me. I like the little stuff like that. Yeah, and then I was messing with formulas for a while because, like, watching crawfish under the water, you know how they'll kind of do their arms up like that, you know, in the defensive position or whatever. And a lot of it sit like that.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of silly. So I actually wanted to make it where it would sit, I guess, at like a 45.
Yeah.
How they do. And so the bait will actually come up and sit like that for a second and fall down, which is just messing with like how much salt you put in there and your buoyancy and different things like that. So it actually does that, which is probably not fun for a lot of people, but that was fun for me, like trying to get that right, where it would actually, when you pop it, it comes up and sits like that, you know, instead of like this or on the ground.
Well, so they are at a 45. Yeah. You know?
A bunch of nerd stuff like that is really fun. It's like the details and building stuff.
I love it.
So we got those two coming out, super cool colors. I designed all the colors. I mean, obviously you got like black and blue flake and stuff like that.
Yeah, but the standard.
Interesting colors that I kind of did. And then we have some other stuff that I hope we will get done in time for iCast. It's some jigs, and they're super, super cool.
Okay.
This flipping jig is special. It's so special. I designed the hook and then how it sits. I can't talk about it a lot yet because it's not done. But man, it's cool. It's really cool. And then we have two more products after that we're kind of still in the early stages of. It just takes us a while. So we'll probably come out with like two here and two there and stuff like that. We just can't. So we couldn't do it right if we just did like 20 right now. You know what I mean?
Well, you say that too much. And I don't care what.
Personally, like testing the stuff, you know what I mean, and making changes and things like that.
Well, I think you want it right, no matter what it is. I think, you know, working with TH Marine, whether it's a boat part, whether it's a lure, or whatever, you don't want to just throw it out there. Okay, I got an idea. It's got to be right. You got to know. Okay, if I put it on this style hook, it might fall over. You know what I mean? Like I designed a jig with Baitworks this year, and just came out actually, and I know what you're saying, like. Swimming pool time was more important than taking it to the lake just because like, hey, okay, well, this idea on paper was all right in my head, this head design, but it doesn't fall the way I thought it would. And then when you start talking about skirts and trailers, and I was trying every different trailer under the sun and making sure it did exactly what I wanted it to do. Right. Like that was huge for me. And what was it like for you when you caught your first fish on something that you dreamed up? Because
I'm trying to think of my first fish. So that was a pond fish.
Yeah.
To my grandparents' pond. That's where I was testing the frogs originally, just because it was next door, you know? Yeah. I remember more when I first threw them, because I had designed the legs at a certain angle and stuff. Like, I knew it was, in theory, I had all this stuff about how I was supposed to walk and everything. And I threw it out there the first time and I hit it and I said, holy shit.
We got it. You said, we got it.
Nailed it. And then I caught a fish. I set the hook and it completely fell apart. It didn't fall apart, but like it ripped. The nose ripped out. The hook slid out. The hooks had, because we had a hard time getting the hooks not to dig into the body, because that was a big thing on the hookup ratio where we set them and stuff. Oh, yeah. Which we addressed that and fixed all that. But, The fish was probably not as a fun memory because it actually messed up and it was like, okay, but I got the action right. Nailed it this time. It was so cool that it worked exactly perfect. There was only a couple little tweaks. And then, I caught the fish and I had some functions not work right. So I was And so we went, you know, and you change it and then you go and catch some more fish. And it's like, oh, this is great. This is working. But this happened. And you make a little thing. And so it's like that. It was like that a lot with that product.
Well, I bet you it's a lot like when you write a song and everybody's screaming it back to you. I know that feeling is one that's very hard to, not a lot of people ever get to know that, you know, an arena full of folks singing words that you dreamed up, wrote on a piece of paper.
Making lures and is so eerily similar to like songs. Like
it is
industry, because you're just taking this idea that you kind of just vomited out on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And then you're bringing it to life and you're tweaking this, like in the studio, you're tweaking this and adding this to make it sound good and maybe you're rewriting a part. It's kind of the same thing. You had this idea with this lure. And then you got it, right? It's like the song on a piece of paper, and then you start tweaking it to make it better. People ask me questions about that kind of stuff before, and I was like, it's like the same exact mental process.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, you don't know. You know, it's like with a lure or with a song, you might think you have like some really cool stuff, and everybody might hate it. So you never know. So it's good in the end if people dig it, because you're just trying to do a good job. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no matter what it is, but that feeling when somebody connects, like I'm sure when somebody walks up to you and says, dude, I caught a 5-pounder on this frog. You're like, you know what? We did.
Yeah, it was with the frogs too. Like it was so cool. We're so blessed. It was overwhelming really. Cause it was like a song thing. It was like, man, people are going to think it's stupid. I'm not a professional bass fisherman. Right. This is you know, where people are going to be like, man, this is stupid. Or are they going to hate the product for some reason?
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I don't think so. I was like, man, we nailed it. But they might think it's stupid, you know? And then so you don't know. And then it come out and we had everybody was really pumped. Everybody liked the product. It did well. We had so many people write in and said that they, you know, they threw away everything and just that's all they had is Toad Thumper frogs. Stuff like that, you know, is really cool. You know, you feel fortunate, you know, that when things like that happen. And, you know, I was like telling somebody, I said, you know, I don't have to be the best fisherman in the world. I just have to be the best at making lures.
That's it. That's it.
Which you can do, because if you understand the concept and the goal of what you're trying to achieve and why you're, you know, you have to know about it, right? The goal that you're after and how you can make it better. Then after that, it's just kind of creative thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? As long as you understand what you're going for and why you're going for it. You know what I mean? The issues at hand. Then it's just, you're just thinking. You're just creating something. You know, and you're trying to figure out how you can, it's like a puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
You know what I mean?
Very much. When you say that, though, that right back to that songwriting thing, that's just that creative process, right? It is a puzzle.
One line leads
to the next thing, or one idea, one melody leads to the next thing. And when it starts rolling, though, right? Like, there's no better feeling. And I know it's like that, whether you're designing something, no matter what.
Do you feel when you write, it's from the unconscious? Like you feel more than the conscious?
Yes. So I have said this to many people on songs that I consider good songs, right? For me, like one that when they happen, there's no reason that they happen. Like I can't explain it. Like my favorite ones, like the ones I play on this podcast for the intro music, whatever that people have, that people write me about, they like, whatever, that I've played for years, they just happen. Like, yeah, there might have been I got an idea about XYZ, whatever it is. But when they just start rolling, it is. It's a very unconscious, whatever you want to call it, thing.
That, weird. Huh? It's very weird. That's what I meant to say. I don't know what I said.
Well, no, I mean, it's
subconscious. My bad.
Yeah, but it's a space that is very hard to get into. And I think that's why, like, Nashville professional songwriters, who I know you've worked with, they amaze me that they can do what they do. Cause I think that's why I struggled so hard. Cause I chased that. I had a little publishing deal through Muscle Shoals for a minute. I struggled with that. Hey, Luke, we're going to pair you up with this guy. Go write this. That ain't my deal. Like it's tough, man.
I could never write like if you were like, hey, we're going to write a song today about, I don't know, tree or something. I could not do it.
Uh-uh.
And sometimes if I write it, it's a good song, it's so quick. And like, I don't even remember it, you know, like remember that I wrote it. It was just like that. So I'm like the same way. Like I could never do that. Like, hey, you got to write a song, a jingle for Express Boats or something. There's no way I could do that. But if I was like, just for some reason, it popped in my mind and I wasn't even supposed to be writing that jingle, then I could, you know what I mean? So it's really weird. I can never write something that, you know, it was funny. So I was doing a like tying jig colors and stuff, and I was going, it was the same thing, man. I was going after certain colors that I had in my mind and they sucked. But I kept at it. It was like writing, right? You just like write this song, it sucks, and it sucks, and oh, I'm making this color, it sucked. And then all of a sudden, like, you don't even remember. I look up and I bought like every color imaginable, right? So I have all these
around.
And for some reason, it's almost like writing a song, it kicks. And then I just started grabbing these colors. And then I look up and I'm like 8 colors into it. And I'm like, wow, these are awesome. There's no way I could have done that by just thinking.
Yeah, you know?
It's the same thing writing a song. It's so weird. The lure thing is the same thing. It's like the same exact stuff.
That's so interesting, man. And I feel like a lot of people, especially creative-minded folks, whatever it is you're doing, you kind of get in a space. When you write, though, Cody, because obviously, like, you guys released an album last year. When you're going into, hey, you guys worked with Dave Cobb, I know you get everything set up. Do you have all the songs written beforehand?
Yeah.
Do you a lot in the studio? But how do you get in that? Try to get to that subconscious, right? You know, you got a project coming up. That's the pressures of doing what you guys do. Like you say, once you monetize, once you are as popular as you guys are, how do you find that subconscious? You know what I mean? Like, is that just you spend enough time with the guitar in your hand that it just happens? Because that's kind of how it's always happened for me when it does happen.
Yeah, so it's like just walking through mud or something. So it's like you grind, or for me, it's just like this sickening amount of grinding. Sometimes you're just laying in bed and a song comes to you, but if you're actually working, like, hey, I'm about to start writing this record, it's like just a month of shit.
Yes.
I mean, it's just like you can't think of nothing. You're like, oh, I'm toast. This is awful. And then, like, maybe on the last record, right, I'm writing, it's like, oh, this is stupid. And then in the same day, I wrote The Wolf off the last record.
Yes.
That morning, I wrote The Wolf. I ate lunch, I wrote Antioch, and then that night I wrote Heart of Stone on the same day. Yeah, you know, so it's weird. It was like
I'd say that's a pretty good day, bud.
It's like, oh, this is awful, and then there'll be one day that I'll write three or four songs. It's weird you writing, and they'll be the best ones that I do, you know, out of that, and then maybe it'll just be a bunch of shit that doesn't make the record, and then you'll have another day where it hits. It was like the jig thing. It reminded me so much when that happened. I had COVID and I was sick, but I had 2 days I had to get it done because I was going back on tour and I had to turn in these colors. I had a fever and I'm sat in my shop and it was hot and I'm just grinding, right? And it sucks for like 2 days. I mean, the colors are probably fine, but in my mind, it's like, nah, this is stupid. And then I look up and I had the colors. I don't even remember it, right? So it's like hit. And then it happened. So it's like that with songs, right? You just walk through mud all of a sudden, and then you're on concrete.
So you wrote those three songs in a 24-hour period. That's how those happen.
And in the same day, it's a lot of stuff like that. So it'll just be like this awful stuff. And then you'll look up and there's three or four songs that you're really proud of. And they always, for me, they come just like, whoa, how did that happen? I never remember how it happens.
Well, that's why I actually had written down in my notebook here, like The Wolf is a song. Our buddy, you got to know Fat Cat Newton, our buddy Fat Cat.
Yeah, I love that guy, man.
Yeah, he's the best, man. He's one of the best humans that I've ever encountered on this great planet.
He's awesome.
And, he loves the song The Wolf. He got me. He's like, dude, that's the anthem. Like, you gotta, because you know, he and I are in the same, we're in the same world, and we talk a lot about you know, especially with social media and things, which I know you try to stay as far away from as you can, which I respect the hell out of that. You got a lot of folks that kind of fake it. You know what I mean? So to speak. And I think those lyrics speak to people so much. I see people sharing that. They make a video and they share The Wolf. I see that all the time, man. Whether they're working out, whether they're, oh, dude, all the time. Like, that song resonates with so many people. And I had down here, though, to ask you, like, kind of where that came from. But you may have answered my own question with the subconscious. Like, did you have a note in your phone? Did you go, oh, did an instance happen to you? Because it's almost like an answer to something, if that makes sense. Right?
It started with that riff. That riff
was, okay,
it was cool, right? Oh, I was like playing that riff down over and over, and then I just looked up and the song was done. It was probably anger. It was like during quarantine, you couldn't work, right? You know, you felt a little bit like, you know, people were taking your job away from you. Things,
yeah, like, of course.
I understand. You know, I get it. Whatever, but there's still something in there, right? You're like, I can't even work, and it probably wasn't during quarantine, but it was during this time where we didn't work for 2 years. So there's probably something like that, maybe, that sparked it. It's kind of a little bit of an angry type song. I wasn't thinking about anything, but that, in hindsight, I was wondering, you know, what inspired that. Because there were some lyrics about put me back in the saddle, out on the road, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I never remember what that stuff's about. If they're good songs, it's like, or what you consider, you know, a good song personally, it's like you don't even know. They just come from somewhere else. You know, everybody said that, you know, like Bob Dylan talks about that, Merle Haggard and stuff. Merle Haggard says they just kind of floating around in the air. And if you don't write it, somebody else will. It's kind of like that weird magic thing. with ideas. It's probably like that on all ideas.
I think it is.
But the lure ideas and stuff are the same. They work the same way for me. For some reason, they'll just pop in my head. And you don't even know why you have a certain idea.
Well, I think that's another comparison to kind of fishing and music. Every chord has been played, right? We know that. Like there are only so many that we can play. Time signatures are what they are. And it's the same with lures. Like you're talking about, hey, I got this jig coming out. There's a lot of jigs. I just released one too. There's a lot of jigs, but I feel like mine is different. And just because it came from between my ears, just like yours is going to be different because you're like, hey, I feel like this fits a need, just like I feel mine does. And it's the same with a song. Like you said, they're floating around and everybody is going to approach it different. And I think the coolest thing about on the music side of it or fishing with a lure is everybody that listens to your songs, myself included, it speaks to me in a different way than it may even you. Right? Like that song, you wrote it, but I may be going down the road and I may be like, hell yeah, I do this to feed my family. That's what, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's why it speaks to me. Cause I'm out here grinding my ass off to feed five kids and take care of my wife and feed my fishing addiction, you know, all that. But those songs, like I get fired up, I crank up the wolf and I'm like, hell yeah. But it may come from a different place for you. Cause you were stuck at home. Couldn't be on the road with your guys trying to feed your family. Like this, totally different place. So I just think that's amazing. And it's always funny. And you probably laugh at this because if you did have a song that you sat down, you had a basic idea to write and a fan comes up and goes, man, Cody, I can't thank you enough for writing this because I know you wrote it about whatever situation. You're like, no, that's actually not it at all. Right. Like you get that sometimes where people walk up and like, dude, man, when you wrote Die Rockin', I know what that's about. You wrote that about that time in 1987 that my dad was on stage in at the Elks Lodge. And you're like, no, that's not it at all. We wrote that. You know?
That's kind of the beauty of songs, though, that they did this thing, like our management and stuff. We did it on one album, and it was kind of a cool idea, you know, when they're doing the making of the album and that they were interviewing us about songs we had wrote and stuff like that and the story behind it. And I did that. And then I was like, hey, I'm not doing that anymore. That's stupid because I want them to get like kind of come to their own conclusions about them. It kind of relates personally to different people, to songs in general, like all songs relate to different people for different reasons and stuff like that. And so I was like, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to explain the songs before they're out because it takes like a beauty element out of it.
I love that. I love that. I'll swear to God, I used to, play like the Bluebird in Nashville, different songwriter rounds. I would tell a different story about a song every time I played it. And every time the same story twice. I'm like, that's not where you decide what it's about. I don't, you know, of course my crap's pretty straightforward, but it's like, here, this is what this is about, you know? And then the next time, hey, by the way, all right, this is about this. Like, I don't know. Some of them are pretty dead on what, you know, you can tell what they're about, obviously. But like, yeah, I wanted to ask you that about the wolf and our boy Fat Cat will appreciate that. I was texting this morning. I was like, man, I got Cody's going, he's going to do the show. And he's like, you got to ask him about the wolf. I got to know the story.
I wrote boy, that. Fat Cat. I wrote that about you, Fat Cat.
Yeah, Fat Cat. Yeah, that's for you, buddy. Oh, man.
He needs to come to a show, man.
I keep telling him that. I texted him in December. I said, dude, you've got to go see these boys. And I bet y'all will get close to his neck of the woods. He's up in Virginia. I bet y'all are getting close. I hadn't looked at all the dates, but y'all will be around him some this summer, I'm sure, at some point.
Are you going to the Classic?
Oh, yeah, baby. I'll be there with bells on. You going to have a booth?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, because this is putting you on the spot, because there's going to be at least 10 people. 10,000, 10, I don't know how many. Be somewhere between 1 and 1 million. Saturday night, there might be a little event taking place. And low budget live, buddy, at a bar. And we might have to play. I mean, there may or may not be some microphones. There may not be some acoustic guitars. And so I'm just saying there's always an open invite, like open mic night, but in front of a bunch of low lifers.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, that's what y'all are doing Saturday night. I got to look at my schedule. I know I'm flying in. And then it's either that or iCast. I have to leave during it to fly to a show. I can't remember which one.
I remember in iCast last year you had to do that. You, the bus, the boys were waiting on you up on the East Coast or something. You just flew down, had to fly back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I gotta do that this year. It's one of those I have to fly out during it. I like the classic a lot. I liked selling it and you know, selling the products and explaining it to people and stuff. I thought it was fun. I don't get to do that kind of stuff anymore. You know, it was like back in the day, you could hang out at the merch booths and stuff like that with people, kind of low key. Yeah. We can't do that anymore. So it was kind of like that. It reminded me a lot about that. And everybody's pretty cool. It was cool. I mean, nobody messed with me or anything. They either didn't care or they didn't know. I was just a dude selling them a frog. There was some people, but so it was cool, man. It was just like talking about fishing and nobody was jacking with you about anything.
Yeah, man.
Everybody was really nice for the most part. You got some weirdos, you know? Everywhere. Some people like stupid stuff. You're like, man, this guy's an idiot.
Listen.
They'll like argue with you about something. It's like, all right, dude.
And they won't.
I liked telling people. So I'll be at the booth again this year. Like, we'll have the plastics there for sure. The funny thing about the class, we didn't know shit, right? We didn't even know we could sell stuff. So we didn't even have that. We figured it out and like flown some in because we found out like the last minute we could sell them, but we only had like X amount. So we only had that booth for like one day because we sold out. So that was hectic. But this time we kind of know what to expect. I had been to a classic before, you know, as a fan, but I didn't, obviously I wouldn't sell anything.
Everybody wants something free when they come by the booth too, don't they? They're like this.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all giving away any, y'all got any candy or koozies? What y'all got? T-shirts?
iCast might have been worse though, man. Everybody, because it wasn't a consumer show, you know, and everybody wanted free stuff. the funny thing though is they'd be like, because we were displaying the plastics at iCast, and they'll come up like, oh man, I really like that, blah blah. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And they'll be like, make it a blah blah, some weird special color, right? That nobody's gonna say this guy. He's like, I'm gonna need 500 of them. Send them to me. Or it wouldn't even be that, it'd be like 50 of them or something. It's like, man, I can't make these baits for you. That happened a lot.
Yes.
Like special color just for them. And I'm gonna need that, and then I'll put you on YouTube or something. It's like it doesn't really work like that.
You know, the show used to be more about the industry, and you kind of had to work in the industry or have a booth to be in it. Well, now in the last probably, I'd say 5 or 6 years, it's more open. I don't want to say open to the public, but they get in, and that's no shot at anybody fishing fan. But man, we get a lot of them like in the booths I work that are just coming around like, hey man, y'all sponsoring people today. You know, and you're like, hang on a second. We're here to sell stuff to like, because we're dealing with the big, you know, tackle stores and things like that. The Walmart, hell, Walmart's there. Bass Pro, they all there, you know. It's a work week. That's why I try to explain to people. I'm like, look, if you come to iCast, be careful who you go around and bug, because it's a lot of livelihoods that are going on in that building that week, you know.
I've had fun though, man. It's been a good adventure. I've met so many good people already. Made some great friends in the fishing industry, and it's been a good trip.
You are more than welcome to be in it, brother. I can tell you that. Everybody appreciates you, and I look forward to seeing you at the Classic. I want to ask you one more thing, and then I'm gonna let you go back to your beautiful bride that set all this up. Thank God that she helped us out here so we could do this video.
I'm about to be back. It'll actually be two screaming kids is what I'll be.
All right, that's all right.
Hectic. This is peaceful right now.
My wife would kick me in the knee if I didn't ask something about this, so I got to. And I find this very interesting too, because I'll never forget watching that first season. I was behind the eight ball in Yellowstone like everybody else, but I'll never forget watching that first season. It's episode 4. You guys are the damn band in the bar, and I'm like, wait a damn minute here. Did you guys know? Because that's season 1, when they reach out to y'all to be a part of that show, did you have any idea that show would become the phenomenon that it is? Because, dude, it's like as big as anything's ever been. Did you have any clue?
No, we didn't know anything. They called the guy, Taylor Sheridan.
Yeah.
The main guy, he called. I guess he got in touch with management. And he called me on the phone and kind of told me the idea about it. Because, you know, it wasn't even out. So we didn't know that it was. It wasn't like, oh, hey, this is a big show and we're going to do it. It was just this idea he had. And I was like, man, that sounds pretty cool. And he was telling us who I was in it. And so and we liked the idea, you know, behind the show and stuff like that. But basically, when I told the guys, I was like, hey, I think we should do this because we might get to meet Kevin Costner. Well, that's really the reason that we – that was kind of like the deciding factor. Like, man, we're going to go meet Kevin Costner. We got to go do this. And we got there. He wasn't even there, man. We never got to meet him.
Wait a second. You still ain't got to meet Kevin Costner?
No.
Well, Kevin Costner, if you're watching this on YouTube, we got a bone to pick with you.
Supposedly, I don't know. Somebody told me that I think John told me that, you know, we'd said that in an interview and then he tweeted or something like that. It was like, y'all, come hang out anytime or something like that. So that was pretty cool. So but that was the funniest thing, just being kind of naive. And we're like, we weren't even thinking about the exposure or you know, it kind of turned into almost a life-changing event for us. It was
so
expensive for our careers. And none of that was weighed at all. It was just, we should do it because I think we're going to get to meet Kevin Costner. And that was so, I guess he kind of, you know, really saved our lives at some point. But yeah, that was a really cool experience for us. The effect was just so massive. We never expected anything like the tidal wave that came after that. You know, we were starting to do really good, especially for an independent band. But we had never had a platform because we weren't into writing radio songs or doing stuff, right? We were like doing whatever we felt like doing. And so we'd never had a platform that it was like millions and millions of people watched that episode. So we'd never had that many people see us before. And so when that happened, it was just so crazy because like all these old records all went like to number one. So we had like the number one record, the number two record, the number three record, and like the number five record. Or something like that. And that was crazy. And that happened like the next day after the episode. And we didn't expect none of that. We just thought we were going to get to meet Kevin. He wasn't here.
He's still holding out.
And from that, you know, it was like kind of right place, right time, you know, and it was just like throwing a match on some gasoline or something. And it just really, the shows just went to where it was like the stuff that was booked, you couldn't even, you know, they were sold out and you were, you know, we just kind of kept going from there. Which is really fortunate for us to be the kind of band we were and like independent and never doing the radio and stuff to have that opportunity. It's kind of bizarre.
It's beautiful. It's what it is, man, because what it shows me, and I say this to, and I bring up my buddy Engelman because I live through you boys, like I said, and I talk Turnpike with him a lot, but seeing those guys come back last year and play the size shows they're playing now, seeing you guys, it what it means is good guys don't always finish last, especially in music business. That's what it means to me because, dude, I have heard of you guys for years. I can remember playing bars and people coming up because I was always into the and I hate the term red dirt, but it is what it is. Texas music, Texas Oklahoma music scene has always been what I have clung to in life, like from a pretty early age. My dad listened to a lot of stuff, but I've always loved that way more and fit in more with that than I ever did Nashville. Even though I'm an hour south of Nashville, that's just always what I loved. And I can remember playing bars even around here in my little small hometown back in probably, you know, 2010, 2011, and people coming up because we'd be covering like Ragweed. You know, nobody did that around here, right? So we'd play Reckless Kelly and Ragweed. We'd be covering that kind of stuff. Be like, hey, man, y'all know Whiskey Myers song? Like, I can remember years ago, like right after probably the Firewater, you know what I mean? It's probably around that time.
Yeah.
People being like, dude, do you guys know Whiskey Myers? So it's so cool to think about how long ago I first got introduced to your music to see. So it's not by accident. You work hard. It's not luck. You get put in the right place for the right thing, man. And seeing that, like, I remember that night watching that with my wife and I was like, Hell yeah. Like, I was like, this is, yeah, and the show's done that for people too, right? Like Taylor, and I guess maybe he's the one that picks it, but it's a lot of Americana, Texas country. Like, he leans on
that's that. Him. That's all him. He does awesome. That music stuff for sure. He's got a lot of cool music on there. I'm pretty sure, just by talking to him and stuff, I'm pretty sure that's all him.
That's cool.
He's from like Waco or somewhere mm-hmm. around there originally.
I think so.
And I think he came to the show the other day. We hadn't seen him since then. When we were in Fort Worth, and he like has a big ranch. And so I guess he lives back in Texas now. But I remember talking to him originally on the phone call, and he telling me that he was like from somewhere around Waco.
Okay.
But yeah, he picks that music. He's always got good music on his like movies and shows and stuff like that.
Well, and then he's got Bingham on the show. And yeah. Bingham's a guy I listened to for years, and now I'm just pissed that I got to share him with everybody too. But I'm happy to see the success. my wife, I've been listening to Bingham for shit, man. That Mescalito album was one of my favorite albums when it came out.
That's a great record.
That's like a deserted island top tenner for me. Like Mescalito's, like always, I can still remember the first time I ever heard it.
Yeah,
buddy of mine from Houston played it for me. He's like, this is the real shit right here, buddy. Like, this is so to see all that, like Taylor, yeah, he deserves props. He probably I'm sure he sleeps okay at night. Taylor, these days.
He's doing so much stuff, he might not ever sleep.
That's true too. He's like
writing like 8 movies at one time and stuff. I don't know how he does it. Those people that are up there in that echelon just have a different work ethic. They're like, they just kill it, man. So interesting to me. Hey, did you ever did you used to play the Zydeco?
I have never played the Zydeco in Birmingham. Never have.
Didn't? Okay, because are you from Georgia or Alabama?
No, I'm from Southern Tennessee, right on the Alabama line. So oh, okay. I'm like Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. I'm right above Muscle Shoals. I'm Muscle Shoals more than I am now. I'm like 40 minutes from the Shoals, kind of where I grew up.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We used to play the Shoals, Huntsville. More than anything, Nashville some, but tried to stay away from there best we could.
Played somewhere right around there. It was like, I mean, it was right there. It was like a festival or a fair or some shit like outside of the city. And like a tornado came and our show got canceled and like all the power. It was like this awful storm and everybody got pissed off at us because we didn't play the show, man. Like people were messages talking shit and stuff like that. And it was the craziest thing, and it was like this awful thunderstorm. It wasn't even like kind of raining, like there was like a fucking tornado warning. And yeah, all the people there were so mad that we didn't even cancel it. You know, that's on like the promoter and stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
That ain't y'all.
Like there wasn't a power. Like it was like a big thunderstorm. And that's, I remember about that area. We played there. Yeah, that's your people right there. Yeah, and they were mad.
Don't throw that on me, Cody.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have been mad. I wonder if that was like the Lincoln County Fair. That's east of me, about an hour. They have some pretty big acts over there. Our county fair gets some pretty good names here, but our county fair here, you never know. I did see George Jones. I got to see George Jones at my county fair.
That's awesome.
Yeah, when I was a kid. But we had like Confederate Railroad, Diamond Rio when I was a kid.
Yeah. That's cool though.
Oh, it's so cool, dude.
I bet a lot of people came to that area though too, just because of the history and stuff.
Of course. And they're headed to Muscle Shoals and you're an hour and a half south of Nashville. So many of them live there. They book folks. The craziest thing that ever happened, I was little when this happened here at my is the Middle Tennessee District State Fair. It's a big fair, man. Probably 100,000 people come through it, you know, in a week. It's wild here in a little town. And Garth Brooks played it. And Garth played it on his first album. And the story of the Rotary Club here is over the fair. And they thought, I think it was the dance had blown up for him. And they thought that this dude was going to show up in like a Mercedes or something, right? And he's just starting out. And he showed up in a beat up pickup truck. And he pulled up to the gate and they wouldn't let him in. Day of the show, and like a friend of my dad's always told that story. He's like, yeah, I got to tell Garth Brooks he couldn't come behind the damn gate.
Didn't have his pay, didn't have his laminates.
Yeah, didn't have anything. He just pulled out, hey, I'm Garth, I'm playing. And I'm like, yeah, sure, buddy, get out of here. And he ends up like getting his mask. Like, no, it's really me. Cause he was young, man. He just started out, but he played here in our hometown, which was pretty damn cool. But yeah, I think Charlie Daniels played here. We had a few, but I don't remember. I don't ever remember you guys being on the bill. It's probably
it might have not been there, but it was right by, like right there, man. I just remember that they were so pissed off at us, man.
Memories.
Yeah.
I love it.
Bad. I mean, it was like torrential rain. It was really bad. Yeah. It's like talking about we was punks or something, man. They were so pissed off at us.
They were it might have been around Jack Daniels over there in Lynchburg. They was all keyed up, man. They had
Yeah, no, I wasn't down there, but I bet there was a lot of Jack Daniels being drunk.
Ain't no doubt, buddy.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. You have some interesting encounters on the road.
No doubt about it. That's a pretty good one, though. Blame the band for the show getting canceled in the tornado.
Yeah, they were pissed off at us.
That's good, man. Cody, I appreciate you, man. This has been awesome. It's an honor to get to spend some time with you and steal you from your family. Ladies and gentlemen, all you lowlifers, Toad Thumper, first of all, go get you some frogs. You're going to want these new plastics, but I promise you, and most of y'all, if you're watching this, I know you're a Whiskey Myers fan, but it's 2023 tour starting up. You better get you some tickets, and you better go see these boys because I promise you it is well worth the trip.
Thank you.
Cody Cannon, everybody.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you, buddy. Well, all right. That's all she wrote. Hope y'all enjoyed that, man. I know you could tell just from my enthusiasm. I was so excited that entire time. I love getting to pick the brains of people that are just pros, man. And that's, you know, that was kind of the basis of this show. When I was fishing the FLW Tour, I wanted to talk to my guys I was fishing against. I wanted to get the scoop, the inside story. And it's much the same in music. My dear friend, Ryan Engelman with Turnpike Troubadours. I love picking his brain about it, and he's equally obsessed with bass fishing, and we're going to get Engelman back on here hopefully this spring. But I love talking about that songwriting process, that creative process, so I'm glad we got to go down that road. And I know so many of y'all are fans of Whiskey Myers and Cody and what they do and what they stand for. And so, again, thank you to Cody, his lovely bride, for sharing him with me for that interview there. I know he doesn't have a lot of time at home, so I was grateful. And we're gonna do it again. And Cody's gonna be at the Classic, so just saying, Cody's gonna be at the Classic. I'll just leave it at that. We'll see how it works out. But there might be an LBL live at the Classic too. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Thank y'all so much for tuning in week in and week out. And 200th episode next week. Can't believe it. It's hard to even imagine that we've been doing it 5 years, and there are more episodes than that. I was telling some lowlifers at the East Tennessee Fishing Show, yeah, there are a lot more than 200 episodes floating around out there, I'm sure. But as far as when I really got serious and started making sure I had every one of them recorded, because we did so many on Instagram Live, and then I don't count the lives that we've done as episodes either. So just as far as like not so lives, 200 straight, man. So next week, got another good one. Hope y'all are back every Monday. I saw so many of y'all at that show. They're like, every Monday. Well, you know, so we like the post office. We're going to show up rain, sleet, snow, or hail. See y'all next week. Take y'all out with some Biloxi Blues. Thank y'all. Appreciate you.
See you. From Jacksontown to Tupelo, I never could make it last. Spanish moss and Civil War ghosts, well, I'm gonna leave them in the past. Any direction, Lord, I'll be fine. It don't matter, east or west. North, south, wherever the wind blows, I'm leaving those burdens at rest. This highway, it does not know my name, and I don't care, no. And I got 3 good tires and a spare. Just a white line gypsy getting out of Mississippi with just enough gas to get there.